Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to the 49th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni. You can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd. My co-hosts today are...
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler.
My name is Keegan Wade. You can find me on Twitter at NaGeek14.
And as always, we just want to welcome you to the podcast. Thanks for all the blog comments and the reviews and the shout-outs on Twitter and all that. It just really keeps us motivated and allows other people to kind of find the podcast. Every little review that you write on iTunes really boosts the rankings of our podcast, and it just is more visible to other users out there and for them to enjoy it as well.
And we would like to thank Remind101 for sponsoring this episode of Edu All-Stars. If you have not heard of Remind101 yet, it is a free, easy way to text parents and students without ever needing their phone number, and they never need yours. And the best thing is it is a one-way communication tool, and you can't text individuals, only groups. It's a really great resource. I know all of us use it, and it's just an awesome tool to have. You can check out for more information on eduallstars.com or remind101.com.
I just want to add in there, it is my number one tool that I use in the classroom. I love it. The kids love it. The parents love it. My administration loves it. Awesome tool.
And as you listen to this week's episode, we encourage you to tweet out using the hashtag #EduAllStars. We love seeing all the conversations and hearing everything that stuck out to you guys and what you liked about the show.
We are very excited to have Jennifer Lagarde on tonight, who is a librarian ambassador and education road warrior, also known as Library Girl. She's an educator on loan for the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction, and she travels across the country working with school librarians, classroom teachers, principals, superintendents, anyone who needs help building or making the most of a 21st century school library. So thank you, Jennifer, for coming on with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
And I love your lower third that I just saw.
Can I give a shout out to Lucas Gillespie at Lucas Gillespie? He's a North Carolina educator rock star who made that lower third for me so that I can be the envy of everyone on Google Hangouts every time I do this.
Absolutely.
He's a rock star. I love him.
I'm feeling totally inadequate looking at my lower third compared to you.
Me too.
The man with the big microphone need not feel inadequate.
So, Jennifer, we always like to start off with our guests hearing a little bit about their background and how they ended up in education. So what's your story?
Well, I grew up in Washington State. My family was, should we start off with a sad story? My family was pretty poor, and we moved around a lot. And really, you know, education saved me. One teacher did. I was really on the fast track to nowhere. I was the first one in my family to graduate from high school and certainly the first one to go on to college, thanks to really one teacher who I credit for making the difference for me. I really got all the way to 10th grade without being able to read or write very well. And she took an interest in me and kicked my hiney a little bit as it needed to be and helped me believe that there was a bigger world out there beyond what I had known. And so after graduation and going on to college, I knew that I wanted to give that back and do the same thing for other kids. Between that teacher and school libraries, I feel like that's really what honestly saved me. So it's a debt that I repay, but I'm happy to do every single day.
Now, you started in the classroom as a classroom teacher, correct?
I sure did. I was a language arts teacher for 10 years. I spent all 17 years of my career in middle school. I don't know what that says about me. Probably nothing good, but I was an 8th grade language arts teacher for 10 years before moving to the school library 7 years ago.
How did you know when you're ready to move to the school library? It's a much different skill. I would imagine it's a much, I don't know that it is for sure, but I imagine that it is a much different skill set than a teacher has, and maybe it requires a different set of training. Is that true? Did you find that to be true?
Well, I'll tell you, the honest truth of it was I never wanted to stop being a teacher. I love teaching so much. I love working with kids, and I really my passion was helping to connect kids with the written word, helping non-readers turn into readers, and helping them love books and seeing themselves as readers and writers, etc. And what I found was is that in the classroom, as much as I loved it, in North Carolina anyway, classroom instruction was moving so quickly towards a standardized model and towards standardized testing that I found it difficult to do the things that I really loved. And then it was literally one of these moments like out of a movie on a day when I've had one of these days where I was questioning sort of what I was doing, if my heart was really in what I was being asked to do. And I went down to the teacher's lounge, and right above the coffee machine was a placard posted for the Graduate School of Library Science at Appalachian State University here in North Carolina, and literally like music was playing and the clouds parted and it was like a beam of light on this thing, you know. I was like, oh my gosh, of course, the library, that's what I need to do. And I literally ripped it down, went into my principal's office, he wasn't there, I shut the door, I used his phone and called Appalachian, and within a couple weeks I was enrolled and just started that next leg of the journey. So to me, and I always joke that it was so lucky that I landed at a school with a principal who had no idea what I was supposed to be doing, because I had no idea either. But I knew I didn't want to stop teaching. I still wanted to be a teacher. I just wanted to do it in this bigger space with more resources and without the ever-looming test behind me, right? So in some ways, it is a different skill set, but in a lot of ways, it's the same, in the sense that what you're really trying to do every single day is make a difference for kids and, you know, connect them with the resources they need to be successful both in school and out of school.
Yeah, that's cool. Now, what's the process like in becoming a nationally board-certified school librarian?
It's the same process as if you were going to be a nationally board-certified school classroom teacher. National board certification is a program that all teachers, administrators, et cetera, can go through. So it's a year-long process of reading and writing and teaching and submitting entries and that sort of thing. National boards is a process that I would strongly encourage anybody to go through. It's some of the best professional development I've ever done, because it causes you to be so reflective about your practice. You have to watch yourself teach over and over again, and let me just tell you, that is horrifying. That if you've never seen yourself videotaped in the classroom, it can be a real eye-opening experience. Just the number of times that you say, okay, or are y'all with me, or whatever it is, you know. But it was a wonderful process, very, very difficult. I found it challenging, but so rewarding, so I was glad I did it. But it's the same as classroom teachers. It's that same exact process.
Now, Jennifer, when I saw you at the Texas Librarian Association, you were keynoting their pre-conference, and one of the stories you told were about how libraries have always meant so much to you because they saved your life.
Yeah.
You tell the listeners who couldn't have been there the story behind that?
Well, I tell you, my story is not that much different than a lot of people, in the sense that a lot of our kids come to school without the resources that they need. My family, like I said, was very poor. We moved around a lot. My parents worked hard, but they never made enough to really make ends meet. And so, you know, when my brother and I got to school, oftentimes we didn't have food or clean clothes or those kinds of things, et cetera, the resources that other kids had, plus added to that the fact that we moved all of the time. I think I told the folks in Texas, and I often tell groups that I speak to, that by the time I was in the eighth grade, I had been to 27 different schools. Mm-hmm. And the eighth grade was really the first year that I ever went to one school for the entire school year. So, you know, I always joke about how I was real old, how I'm really old. And so back then there weren't mandatory attendance laws, which is true. And when I would show up at a school, you know, a lot of times, more times than I can count, I would show up, fill out whatever paperwork needed to be filled out, or my mother would. And then the secretary would just point me down the hall and say, you're going to be in room such and such. Or, you know, your brother goes down here and then you go there. And so I'd walk my little brother to class and then I'd go straight to the library. Nobody was looking for me, so why not just go there? So I would go to the library and look for a Judy Blume book and hide under a table. And I'm telling you, Todd, Chris, it's the truth, that I would spend my entire tenure at some schools in that spot, because nobody was looking for me. Nobody was, like, sending out the troops looking for little Jennifer, so I would hide there. It was a safe place for me. And what I know now is that, you know, the library represents a safe place for a lot of kids. You know, a lot of kids like me who come to school feeling like an outsider or other, the playground, even the classroom, can be a scary place because it's difficult to fit in or feel like you have the skills or whatever that you need to be successful in those places. So the library can be that place.
That's interesting.
And it definitely was for me.
Yeah, I've never even thought of about it that way, but last year I spent a lot of time, like my off period, I would go to the library and just kind of like get into a corner and just set my computer up, and I guess I didn't know why I was doing that, but it is. It's a safe place. It's quiet. You can get some stuff done. It feels like kind of like home when you're in there, and that is cool. I never even thought about that some kids may think about it that way. So in 2011, you were awarded the I Love My Librarian Award by the American Library Association, the Carnegie Corporation, the New York Times. Can you tell us a little bit more about that award?
Yeah, that was like the Oscars for librarians, I'm just going to tell you. It really is. That's a special award, in my opinion, because it's all patron-initiated. Somebody who comes to your library and goes to your library has to nominate you for that award. So it's not like your principal. It's not like anything like that. It's got to be a student or a teacher or something like that. And so one of the teachers at my school nominated me, and that year, I mean, I was one of 10 who were chosen. There's 10 chosen across the country, and I was the only one of 2 school librarians. So they fly you to New York, and that year Caroline Kennedy gave the award, so you get to, like, hobnob with Caroline Kennedy. Yes, I know. We stayed in the Trump Tower. It was crazy. Donald Trump was, like, on my bottled water. I still have the bottle. It was nuts. But, like I said, it was like the Oscars. But it was really cool because it really gave me a chance. That was the first opportunity I had really to share what school libraries meant to me and how valuable they are, I think, to the school community, et cetera, in a bigger way. And that's so important to me because school libraries are on the chopping block everywhere. And so I feel like it's my mission, I really do, to try to save them for students.
That's cool. Now, you also write quite a bit. Have you always been a natural writer?
Heck no. I have got to credit, again, my 10th grade English teacher, Sharon Koontz. If you're out there, mwah, 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 I love you. She is the one who plucked me out of, like I said, the fast track to high school dropout and kept me after school and told me, you know, you're going to have to learn to read and write if you're going to get anywhere. And so she really helped me hone my skills in that way. And I've always loved reading, and I've always aspired to want to master that craft. So over the years, it's just been a matter of hard work, you know, and discipline. It did not come naturally to me. So I've just had to really practice, and try to get better. And I feel like I have. I hope I have.
Well, you know, you mentioned reading quite a bit, and as a librarian, I think we assume that librarians are reading probably double what everybody else is.
Take away our card if we don't.
So if you had to pick the best 3 books that you've ever read, what 3 books would you pick?
Holy smokes, that's the hardest question ever. I cannot believe that you're putting me on the spot with that. Let's see. The best 3 books ever in the whole world. Okay, I'm going to get this wrong. I'm just going to go ahead and pluck 3. And then all night long, I just want you to know, I'll be thinking, I should have said this one. Okay, so I guess, believe it or not, this I'm going to start with a classic. A book that meant a lot to me that was really like got me on the track of believing that literature could change the world was The Crucible by Arthur Miller. And again, that was a book handed to me by my 10th grade English teacher. But just the impact that had on politics at the time, et cetera, made me believe that fiction could change the world. And so that book meant a whole lot to me. A book that I've read recently that I just think is so wonderful that I'm sure a lot of your listeners have read is Wonder by R.J. Palacio. I don't know if you guys have read it, but it's just a sweet, sweet book about, again, a kid who feels other in the world, and the lessons of being kind to one another, I think, are so, so important in that book. And then I guess I'll go another direction, another book that really meant a lot to me that made me feel like becoming a teacher was not just the path that was good for me but was also a noble and important cause was Savage Inequalities by Jonathan Kozol. I don't know if y'all have read that, but it's a classic book, too, about the inequalities that exist in our school system between rich and poor and about how, you know, separate but equal is often not equal at all. And so, at any rate, that's a wonderful book that changed my life. I could go on and on about this. Like, now that you've got me on a roll, I could start talking about all sorts of books, but I'll stop at those three.
Well, it's so funny that you mentioned Wonder, because I think just about every person that has anything to do with middle school or elementary mentions that book, because it is... I remember my reading team teacher gave it to me last year to read, and she was like, if you're going to read any book this year, this is the book you have to read. And it was just heartbreaking, but also it was a great read. And I don't know if you know, there she's releasing a sequel to it.
The Julian chapter.
Yes.
Yes, I know. I've been seeing online where people have been reading it, but I haven't read it yet. And I love that. I think it's so important. I love the idea of being able to get into the mindset of the bully, you know, to be able to see the other side of that is so, so important. But that book is amazing. And as a middle school teacher myself, you know, it's hard to find a book that both eighth graders and sixth graders fall in love with, but that was definitely it. And nobody was like, you know, they weren't all fighting for the debt to the death either, you know, like mostly it's where we have to have a blockbuster at the end in order for them to really get excited about it. But no wonder it was one of those books. I loved it so much.
Have you read Because of Mr. Turrupt?
I haven't. Tell me about that.
Okay, so that's the other one that my reading teacher gave me. Mm-hmm. And I gave it to my mom, and she's one of those that, I mean, she teaches third and fourth grade reading and writing. Mm-hmm. And she told me, she always gets mad at me because I give her books, and she's like, am I going to cry, laugh, or hate you after I read this book? And if I don't warn her correctly, she gets really mad at me.
I love it.
It is a tearjerker, and you will cry probably 4 to 5 times throughout the book. But I honestly, I liked it even more than Wonder.
Really?
But it is
such a
moving book.
Who wrote it, Todd?
I don't know. You would ask me that. I can look it up real quick.
Yeah, we'll look it up while I ask the next question.
Keegan's not doing anything. Keegan, wake up and look it up for us.
Keegan, stop playing Minecraft and join the conversation. And so, like, I know
Rob Bouye, B-U-Y-E-A.
Okay. I love it. Okay, so that'll be my next one.
You have to. And it has a sequel as well, but you have to read the first one and let me know what you think. Cause...
Okay.
Can I talk now, Todd, or so I know that our middle school librarian reads a lot of young adult. I mean, is that what you find yourself reading in your free time just so, to help out students, or do you read, like, adult novels too?
I mean, I do. I find myself reading a little bit of both now that I'm in this job where I work primarily with teachers, because I'm not hearing about. I mean, I relied so much on my kids to come in and say, "Miss Lagarde, have you read this book? You know, oh my gosh, have you heard about this book? Or Miss Lagarde, I need a book about this." And so that would drive me constantly to the next book.
Sure.
But you know, now I've been reading a little bit more. Adult kind of books, and I have really strange tastes when it comes to that kind of stuff, but right now I'm reading a book called Red Shirts, and I can't remember the author's name, but we'll get Keegan on that. This book is about, you know, you guys know Star Trek, right? You know how the characters in all the red shirts are the ones that always die?
Sure.
Come on, be geeks. I'm
a science teacher. I know that.
Thank you. All right. Well, this book is all about how those characters figure out that they are the ones that are going to die and they rebel. So it's this fantasy world where the red shirts take over, right? So it is. It's funny. It's really, really funny. So I'm enjoying that. But I read a lot of nonfiction, too, in the adult literature, so-called. You know, I tend to like that kind of stuff. So.
Cool.
Yeah. Now, what role do you see libraries having in the typical school, and does it change from elementary to middle school, or does it stay the same, you think?
Well, you know, a friend of mine once told me that he felt like libraries were the conduit, like they were the things that connect teachers, students, community, whoever, to resources. And so I think the resources change, but the role doesn't. One of my heroes, David Lankus, he talks about how the library mission of the library is really to make the community better and stronger, because the more literate, the more, you know, well-read, the stronger students are in those skills, then the stronger the community is. Because, you know, the more we increase literacy among our students, then we increase literacy in the community, et cetera. So I don't think the role changes so much. I just think the resources do. You know, in elementary school, then you're going to be connecting kids with a certain cadre of resources, whether they be technology or print books or whatever. And in middle school, you're doing the same, and the same thing is true in high school. It's the same mission. It's just what you connect kids with and how you connect it that changes.
So what has been the biggest thing that you have learned in the last year?
Holy smokes. I'll tell you, I'm sort of diving into right now this project that I'm working on with Doug Johnson in trying to sort of suss out the role of school libraries in schools that have rolled out one-to-one BYOD environments. Because I work a lot with principals, believe it or not, I work a lot with school librarians now, but I work a lot with school principals too. And that's a question they ask me over and over again, is why do I still need a library when we all have a library in our pockets? And so this whole, and also I've been talking to librarians who work in those special environments, and for a lot of librarians, if they haven't evolved to be more than just somebody who checks out books, then they're finding themselves to be irrelevant in that new environment. They talk about things like, oh my gosh, the library's become a tomb because nobody comes here anymore. Well, you know, they need to start rethinking their role a little bit and what it is that they do. So I've spent the last year working with librarians in North Carolina and really around the country, but from that work, this idea of what school librarianship looks like where everyone has a device, where there are no more print materials, because I think that's where we're going, at least in North Carolina. There's not going to be money for print materials. So what is the role of the school librarian in that environment? So I'm not really answering your question with what I have learned, other than to say that I've learned that's a huge issue, and I'm trying to do some research and figuring out what the answer to that is. I think there still is a very definite and important role for school librarians, because being able to Google something doesn't mean that you're able to find the best source, doesn't mean that you know how to recreate those sources, doesn't mean that you're able to evaluate whether information is factual or relevant or recent or any of those things. So you still need someone to help connect teachers, principals, students, et cetera, with the best information. And then you need someone to help coach those folks into using those materials to create new knowledge, rather than libraries as just places where we get knowledge, where we go pull it off the shelves. I see libraries as evolving into spaces where we build new knowledge, especially in one-to-one BYOD environments. So that's what I'm learning about and thinking about these days.
Well, you know, it's funny because when I see some librarians like you and Shannon Miller and some other librarians, the things you're doing, the library is not at all what you stereotypically would have thought about it. It's become something different entirely, where it's an active space. It's like a extension of the classroom. It no longer is a place where you go to get a book and meet a little lady behind a counter and check out the book from her. It becomes a place where it's learning, it's active, it's busy.
Yep. It's like, you know, and I think I said this in Texas, and I use this quote all the time from Joyce Valenza. I need to start paying her royalties, but the old model of the library was like the grocery store where you come in with your cart and you fill it up and then you leave. And to me, the new model of the library is the kitchen where you come in and you get your resources, but then you make really cool stuff together. You know, and Shannon is a wonderful example of that. And there's lots of libraries across the country who, you know, librarians who have moved towards that model where they see that kids and teachers and principals, their community, they don't need help finding resources anymore. Finding a resource is a problem that our patrons will never have again. The problem they have is now, A, how do we find the best resource, and B, what do we do with those resources now that we have them? So the library becomes, just like you said, Todd, this extension for enrichment kind of work, for PBL, for inquiry, for doing those big, dirty projects that sometimes in the classroom you just, A, don't have the time, B, don't have the space, you know, any of those kinds of things, or C, just need another set of hands. So the library and the librarian becomes important in that work, I think.
What are three words you hope people would use when describing you?
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. Three words. You guys, these are hard questions. I would hope that they would say that I am dedicated, although I always think of a phrase that, you know, the root word of dedicated is dead, so I worry about that. But I would say that I hope they would say that I'm fun, that I am devoted to this, and that, I don't know, that I'm for real, you know, that I'm can be counted on, I guess. That's a lot more than three words.
Yeah. Now, looking back like 5 or 10 years, what's a piece of advice that you would give yourself today?
Wow, that is a really good question. Well, let's see. Like, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, I was just thinking about leaving the classroom and going on to becoming a librarian. And I would say that my advice would be, don't be afraid. Just go for it, to follow your instincts. Because I, you know, was timid and worried about making the change and also about doing it wrong once I got there. And I've since learned that there is no wrong way. There's just your way. So I would say to myself, go for it. Don't be afraid.
And what is something that you've accomplished that you are most proud of?
What is something that I'm most proud of? Gosh, these are hard questions. Well, this has just become public knowledge. I just signed a book deal with ABC-CLIO. I'm going to write a graphic novel for librarians on how to avoid the zombie librarian apocalypse, where I'm going to draw zombie librarians. It's going to be like The Walking Dead meets the library. So I'm really proud of that, even though I've done none of the work yet. So I'm proud that I have said I will do a lot of work. That I'm really proud of that. I say also, you know, I think my proudest moments are when I run into students, honestly. You know, when I bump into a kid that I taught or that I hadn't in the library and they tell you a story that you don't even remember. You know, Miss Lagarde, remember when you said this? Or Miss Lagarde, remember when you gave me that book? And of course you say, yes, of course I do. But those moments really make me the proudest. You know, those are the ones that refuel me for the next day and the next gig or the next whatever, more than any of the other stuff.
And lastly, Jennifer, we always like to end the conversation with, what's something you're really passionate about right now, whether it be in education or outside of education?
Gosh, well, I'm sort of a rabble rouser. I would say definitely I'm really most passionate when it comes to education. I don't really care. I can't say I don't care at all about politics. I do, but to me it's not about right or left. It's about right or wrong. And I just see too much of education being caught up in politics and being about politics instead of pedagogy. So I guess I'm just really fired up and passionate about doing good things for students and showing off what's good in education, because there's so much good going on in schools and in our libraries, etc. So that's why I was so tickled to be asked to do this, and any other opportunity that I have to show off what's going on in our school libraries, that's really what I'm passionate about.
Awesome. I love that. Well, thank you so much for coming on with us tonight, Jennifer.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
So have we. And for those of you listening and watching, you can connect with us on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ or using the hashtag EduAllStars. Check out our website, www.eduallstars.com/podcast. And you can find the podcast on iTunes. Search out EduAllStars with no spaces.
And so I know summer's just around the corner and you guys are probably going to wind down and, you know, not listen to podcasts all summer long, but this party is going to continue all summer long. Todd and I had a conversation and he's lined up some fantastic guests. We're going to plan to release a new episode every week throughout the summer. So when you're sitting by the pool or you're at the party, whatever, you know, bring your iPod with you and listen to us. So next Monday, June 2nd at 8 p.m. Central, we're going to have Principal Ben Gilpin on. And then we'd also like to thank our sponsor. I went ahead and do this for you, Todd. Sorry. We'd also like to thank our sponsor again, Remind 101. Awesome, awesome tool. I know Todd and I use it all the time, and it sounds like Jennifer does too. Just a super cool technology. You should definitely check it out.
And thank you again, Jennifer, for coming on with us. It was a blast talking to you and getting
to see you
again after not seeing you for a couple months. So
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed meeting you, Chris, and making fun
you
of
too.
Keegan. It's good fun. Thank you.
And we will see everybody next week.